This week on the show, we have all of your NFL previews from the Patriots to league-wide, what to expect on the field in 2018. Plus, one of our favorite shows returns this week after a multi-year hiatus. Which one and what's going on with the cast? All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Welcome into Calling It's Week 1 NFL show. Football for like the 500th time we've declared it. Alex Lebowitz is back. Again, I am Alex Barth. He is Alex Lebowitz. We are powered by CLNS Media. Although I'll be honest, Mr. Lebowitz, I am just powered by adrenaline today, knowing that we are that much closer to NFL football.
Yeah,
real NFL football.
It's great. It's awesome. A lot of uncertainty with the Patriots, you know, relatively speaking, but we're back. Now we got something to hold us over till, you know, February 2nd.
All right, so we'll start with the Patriots. Here's how we're going to do this. We're going to start with the Patriots. Then the next segment, we'll do some NFL stuff, and then we're going to do our non-sports segment after that. So if you hear us maybe miss certain talking points, we're saving it for later in the show. And again, I want to apologize. The show is coming out on Wednesday this week. The date may change of the show. We have a new layout for football season, so If there's a day you want us to do, let us know on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. We're looking at probably a Tuesday, Wednesday thing, maybe Thursday. So again, let us know at Calling It Podcast what day you want us to do the show, and of course we'll have some input as well. Alex Lebowitz, I'm not going to just totally leave it up to the fans. But let's get into the Patriots. I want to get into the Patriots after this hell of an off season. They return to the field. The Tom versus Time epilogue today, I think, did a good job to put a lot of that drama to bed. Boston Sports Radio will dig it back up. But the fact of the matter is, Brady acknowledged, look, it's like an 18-year marriage. There's going to be highs, there's going to be lows, but we're going to go out there and do our best. And I think that the prognostications of death of the Patriots dynasty are maybe a year or two premature, because they still have Brady and they still have Belichick. The schedule's harder this year. They have less talent around Brady. I think it's going to be a step back from next year. But if I had to sum up this Patriots team going into the season, a couple words, I think it's surprisingly capable.
I mean, they're always going to be capable, but what you're referring to there, the epilogue from Tom Brady, I watched it today. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's easy for someone after an entire offseason to talk all happy and say, yeah, 45, that's going to be the age I do it. But we saw Rob Gronkowski after the Super Bowl ended. He was pretty much contemplating retirement. Obviously, he's changed his tune since then. But I think it's easy for guys to kind of look at it in a positive light when they've had a bit of a hiatus, like Brady and really the entire Patriots team has this offseason. So right now, yeah, you got to be somewhat optimistic compared to what the rhetoric's been surrounding this team. That said, I want to wait and see what they do. And I want to wait and see if there's any conflict that does arise between now and, you know, midseason. Right now, I think they have a good roster overall. Obviously, there's question marks at certain spots, but you got Tom Brady, you got Belichick. I know it's cliche, but they're always going to be the best team in the AFC when you have those two people. I think they're going to win the AFC East. I don't think I'm all that concerned. That said, the future for this core is still uncertain. I think it's always going to be uncertain, at least when you got a 41-year-old quarterback at the helm.
Well, let's keep it to this year right now, and we'll start with the good. Give me one player you think is due for a breakout season in 2018.
One player that's due for a breakout season. I think it's probably going to come on that defensive end. We saw it with Trey Flowers last year, who really I'd consider that his breakout year. Maybe this season is the year in which he really solidifies himself as an elite pass rusher. Malcolm Brown, someone who hasn't really caught a lot of eyeballs. He's been good enough, but I feel like he's still capable of doing a little bit more.
That next level.
Exactly. That said, I don't know if there's really any player on this team that I'm looking at to have a breakout season. With the Patriots, they usually get a lot out of guys who aren't maybe that capable of having a really breakout season. So I think we'll see a lot out of James White this year. But in regard to breakout season, I think it's coming from that defensive side of the ball.
So I agree with your last point. I think a breakout season by Patriots standards is much different than a breakout season by NFL standards. The Patriots aren't producing players that are superstars in fantasy football. That being said, if there's a guy I think is going to impress people this year, surprise some people, put up bigger numbers, that would be Philip Dorsett. I thought when they traded for him last year, he was an outstanding player. He's a great fit for their offense. I still believe that. And I know people will look at the numbers from last year and the down production from last year. He didn't even catch a touchdown. And tell me I'm wrong, but we see it around the league. When guys come in, you know, September 1st, August 31st, September 1st, whenever Dorsett was traded to New England, it was in that week before the regular season. It's not like Madden where you can just drop them in and play them. They have to learn the offense. They have to get used to playing with their teammates, all of that. And Dorsett didn't really have a chance to do that last year. He had to learn on the fly. I think now coming into 2018, he's had a full year in the system. He's had a full year working with Tom Brady. He's going to be – he naturally has to be featured more in the offense with the losses of Brandon Cooks and Danny Amendola. Brady's spoken very highly of him. He's said all the right things. He's done all the right things. I think Philip Dorsett is due from Patriots standards for a big year this year. I think he is going to be on the radar, and I think a lot of Patriots fans are going to have their opinions changed from what they thought of Philip Dorsett last season.
We'll see if that makes that Jacoby Brissett trade look a little bit better. Not that Brissett was going to be this outstanding quarterback. Another guy, though, that might be on that offensive side of the ball that it steps it up this season. This is kind of out there, but you hear from a lot of beat guys, Jacob Hollister, who's done a lot with Tom Brady.
Big Hollister guy over here.
And with Dwayne Allen, who's on his way out after this season, they're going to need a successor. So I wouldn't be surprised if he leapfrogs over Allen.
I think he already has. I think he is in passing situations. Yeah, he is. So the way they'll do it is Gronk is the number one. At least this is how they've been doing it at practice. Gronk is the number one tight end. Hollister is the number two tight end in passing situations. And then Allen is essentially the number two tight end in blocking situations. So essentially Hollister is the second. He's going to get used more. They're going to use Allen in second and short, third and short situations. They're going to bring Hollister in when they want that extra pass catcher on the field. So I don't know. Maybe leapfrog isn't the right word, but Hollister will be as much of a factor in this offense as Dwayne Allen is.
He's a situational threat.
Yes. Yes. That's the term I was looking for. Thank you.
Yeah.
So the flip side of the – nope. Go ahead.
No, that's it. That's it.
No, tough with this online thing. Come on.
I know. And I don't have a video feed. We're doing this on Google Hangouts, so you get the audio version at home. But Alex can't see me. My camera does not work. So it's tough. We're cutting in and out of each other.
And on the flip side, Lebowitz has to look at me, which I'm sure is a disgusting, distracting sight.
I have another window up, actually, to avoid that.
Good for you. Good call. Good call. Who do you think is going to disappoint people this year?
Who's going to disappoint people this season? I don't know. I think there's always concern with someone like Julian Edelman who's coming off of an injury. I like to think that he would step it up this season, but – whenever you're dealing with a torn ACL, it's always a tough road to recovery. On the defensive side of the ball, Dante Hightower is getting to an age where, you know, the people at that position start to hit a wall. Will he hit that wall this season? I don't know. I don't think we know enough. We don't have enough to go off of at this
point. I mean, I'll tell you that he's looked outstanding in the preseason. He has been in practices and training camp. He's looked like he is fully healthy and ready to go.
So maybe he will be, and maybe the bigger concern isn't his ability, but his availability.
That's fair. Okay.
So that might, and I wouldn't consider that disappointing, but he is going to be huge.
No, I think a lot of Patriots fans would be disappointed. The team would be disappointed if he can't stay on the field. He's completely changed his workout regimen and the way he takes care of his body to tailor it to trying to stay on the field for a 16 to 20 game season. Like, he's put effort in specifically to the durability side of his training. This is something that he's told me. He's told reporters that he focused on maybe more than anything else in the offseason. It was not just getting healthy and recovering from his injury, but getting into a certain shape where he won't get hurt seriously this season.
And I'd have more confidence if there was more depth at that position. So I trust that he's probably tailored his workout regimen to help him, you know, with longevity. But I think given the fact that there's not a ton of depth at that position, especially for the type of role that he has, there is that concern that he might be overworked. He might go out with an injury, and they might be screwed at that second level.
So I got one on offense, one on defense as well. Offensively, I think Chris Hogan takes a step back this year. Part of the reason he was so good in the past is he was essentially covered by guys like Brandon Cooks and Julian Edelman. And he was drawing the second, third, even fourth defensive assignment. And he's a very good player. He's going to beat those guys. Now he's going to get the other team's number one corner. He's going to be going up against number one cornerbacks pretty much every week. Maybe some teams put that guy on Gronk, but he's not a number one receiver to me. He's not. I don't know if he's good enough to beat those guys as consistently as he will need to put up the numbers he did last year. I think Chris Hogan takes a step back being put more in the spotlight. And on the other side, for similar reasons, Stephon Gilmore, he doesn't have Malcolm Butler on the other side now. They don't really have a true second corner. It's going to be a rotation between a number of players. We saw Stephon Gilmore struggle early last season. We saw him struggle at times in the preseason this year. He's going to have an intense focus on him because he is the replacement for Malcolm Butler. Don't look at it any other way. They didn't want to pay Malcolm Butler. They brought Stephon Gilmore in to replace him. They just did it a year before Butler was gone. And I think Butler, look, he's still going to have safety help and all that, but based on what they were doing in practice today and based on what they've been doing this week, we're going to know right away he's going to get the matchup on DeAndre Hopkins for most of the game this coming Sunday. And if he locks down Hopkins, I'm going to feel monumentally better about this defense than I do right now. Not that I'm too concerned about it, but Gilmore for me is the one area of concern.
He might be the most important player on that defensive side of the ball. On that side of the ball, just because Butler, with the absence of Butler, he needs to be a legitimate number one cornerback this year. And if he's not, they're in trouble.
I want to pick up the pace a little bit here, but every year it seems like the Patriots lose one divisional game. They might lose more this year. They might not. But if there's one divisional game the Patriots lose, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but now we know the starting quarterbacks. So just real quick, I think you had Buffalo at home.
I think I had Miami, you know?
No, you did have Miami. Yes, you had Miami. Yeah. Are you sticking with that?
Yeah, especially considering the fact that they got rid of McCarron and it's going to be Nathan Peterman as their
quarterback. You're switching to Buffalo from Miami.
No. I'm going back to Miami. I'm saying, okay. But before, I had question marks already at that quarterback position,
okay,
with that team in general, given the fact that their starting quarterback is going to be Nathan Peterman. It's not them. Definitely not the Jets at this point. Miami's got the best QB. I think they took a step back with their wide receiving core and their defensive line. But still, I think they're just the best team, really just the least worst.
Yeah, the least worst is better than best, although I think – that Monday night game in Buffalo is going to be tough. I'm going to go with one of the games. They have three divisional games to end the year. I'm going to go with one of those because I'm not sure how much of those games will matter. All right. Before we wrap it up, Lebowitz, this segment up, give me your Patriots record and how will they make another Super Bowl appearance? You don't have to give me if they win it or not, but will they make another Super Bowl appearance?
Yeah, I think they're going to be 12-4, and I think they'll make it to another Super Bowl. Yeah.
I got 12-4 too. I think they get back. Doesn't feel like a 14-win year. Tougher schedule, and I think it's going to feel like a tough 12. It's going to feel, I think, more like 10 wins. There's going to be some tough games in there. They'll win 12, and I think they get back to the Super Bowl because of what's going on. Not necessarily. It doesn't say as much about them, and they still have Brady and Belichick, and that's really what it comes down to. As long as those two guys are here, they will be the AFC favorite every year, but my confidence about them going to the Super Bowl is more about things going on elsewhere in the AFC as opposed to what's going on in New England. Why is the stock suddenly so high on the Patriots? We'll get to that on the other side. This is Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Can you turn on my headphones just a bit?
Welcome back to Callin' It, powered by CLNS, our NFL preview edition. Alex Barth along with Alex Lebowitz. We're going to do this a lot like we did our MLB previews, you know, give out the awards, the teams to watch, the players to watch. But before we get into that, one NFL thing of note, maybe the NFL thing of note today, we're recording the show on Wednesday this week, is the Pittsburgh Steelers imploding in front of our eyes. The Patriots' biggest and, I might even say, only real competition in the AFC. their best player hasn't shown up just to fill everybody in. He's not in attendance with the team. At this point, it seems beyond a stretch he won't play in week one. And now you have offensive linemen and other members of the team just openly trashing him in the media. One player, I believe was the player rep for the union, photoshopping his face onto Where's Waldo body. So a disaster town in Pittsburgh right now.
Yeah, and I think I understand where the players are coming from for sure.
Oh, totally.
Like when you got a guy who's just not showing up, and you know he is worth more than what he's getting now, you could argue. But the fact is, it's week one of the NFL season, and if I were an NFL player, I get the priority being getting paid and looking out for yourself and your family. But you got a team around you, and you have to do what's best to win at the same time. He's clearly not doing that. He's clearly pissing off his teammates, and it's creating some turmoil. I think the only consolation is that it's something for the other Steelers to kind of rally behind, and maybe it could work out in favor in that regard. And they got other weapons on that team. It's not like they don't have Antonio Brown or Ben Roethlisberger, so they'll be fine. They would be fine even without Le'Veon Bell.
I don't know about that, because without Le'Veon Bell, they're one-dimensional.
That's true.
James Conner's not a great running back. He's not. He's good inside the 20s, a good power back, whatever. He's not a feature back. Yes, they have playmakers in the passing game between Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster. They have a lot of good players, but they're completely one-dimensional if they lose Brown.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. They do need him, and I think you got to put some blame on the ownership to an extent, because they've let it get to this point. If you knew that he was going to do this, why not do what the Raiders did and trade the guy for a pick or two first round picks, which they maybe would have gotten.
Bell's been hinting he was going to do this for about 2 years now.
This could
come out of nowhere.
Yeah. So I'm sure that some frustration from those offensive linemen that have spoken out is directed towards that front office. And right now,
I didn't get that vibe. I think they're pissed at Bell.
Well, probably more so at Bell, but the reality is this probably could have been nipped in the bud. To begin with,
the Steelers could have never paid Le'Veon Bell. They would have lost everybody. They would have lost Brown. They would have lost Schuster. They would have lost everybody on that defense. They couldn't pay him that contract and keep that team. And I think any player in the locker room should recognize that. Look, it's one thing if they were haggling over making him the highest paid player in at his position. It's one thing if they were haggling over $2 or $3 million. Bell wants to be the highest paid running back in the league by about $10 million. He wants to be the equivalent to a top 10 paid quarterback in a position that is historically very unreliable when it comes to health. I do not put – and look, I don't think Mike Tomlin's a good coach. I don't. He'd be a good college coach. He has no business in the NFL. I put no fault on the Pittsburgh Steelers for this. This is Le'Veon Bell being childish and unrealistic.
Well, here's the problem, and this is why I think they should have traded him – you know, prior to this offseason, prior to this past season. Now, if you try to trade him, guess what? Every other team has leverage. You got to get rid of him. It's not like you can get what he's actually worth. You're going to have to sell him off for short money. And then they're really screwed, and they lose an asset for a lot less than what he's actually worth. And that's where my frustration would lie if I was a Steelers fan. Because as you said, he's been hinting at this. He was going to do this from the start. He's a guy who's been about the money and been about getting that big contract. And now, again, week one, he's not there. His teammates are pissed. The fans are pissed. And I know that you want to put the blame on Bell, but I feel like he left that front office with no options prior to this offseason. They should have seen it coming. And I think this is going to be a lesson for a lot of other front offices in the NFL.
Does he play this year?
Yeah, I think he'll play this year. He's got to, because, I mean, he's just not going to get paid. The guy likes to get paid. He doesn't show up. He's not fulfilling his contract, his duties, and he's screwed out of money. So if money's really his priority, then he's got to. He's got to. And I don't think the Steelers are going to budge at this point. You could argue that what he's doing is counterproductive for his own cause.
Yeah, I think today – I agree with that last part, but I think today was a tipping point. I don't think he can play this year. I don't know how he goes back into that locker room right now. And guys openly saying that they don't like him, that they won't block for him, that they – I think a couple of players said they don't want him back. I don't know how – if the Steelers trade him, maybe partway through the year, maybe he goes with a new team. I don't see how he plays for the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. Maybe he will, but that may make the situation worse. Honestly, I think at this point, if I'm Mike Tomlin, I just tell him to stay home. I say, don't come in. We don't want you here. I think that, first of all, sends a great message to the locker room if he were to do that. And I think Bell would be more of a distraction than anything else. Look, is your running game going to suffer? Sure. But if Bell comes in and all of a sudden you have him freelancing, you have other guys on the offense freelancing, that's just going to be out of control.
Yeah, and I think that's the only way that the Steelers can spin this in a positive direction if Tomlin does pull the trigger, if that front office does pull the trigger and gets rid of him. And I say that he's going to get less than what he's worth, but you can still get a lot for a guy like Le'Veon Bell, even if you're not –
especially – let's say a team like the Cardinals, right? They lost David Johnson last year. Let's say a team that's making a playoff push – needs a running back or wants a running back, you can get a first, maybe two firsts as a rental. I don't know if he's going to re-sign this year. I don't think you'd get like you did with Khalil Mack, where he was traded and then had the extension. I don't think a team's going to give up 2-3 first round picks and then pay Le'Veon Bell, because that's just sacrificing a lot for a guy who's a running back and is what, 28 years old, I think. I think if he may, his chance of playing this year is if he gets traded midway through the season to a contender who knows all the way through that he's coming in as a rental.
I don't even think you necessarily have to give up a first round pick for a guy like that. I think the value might, the trade might be, you know, a second and a third, or 2 seconds and a fourth, or something along those lines. I can't see a Khalil Mack size trade for Le'Veon Bell, especially.
I don't think the Steelers do it for anything less.
Well, then
if they let him walk, they'll get a third round comp pick. So you have to give them at least a third, you have to give them at least a second, because they would get, if you give them a third, they'll get the same if they let him go.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I think I'm not saying that it would be like a third and a fifth. It wouldn't be like the Patriots getting Randy Moss for a fourth round pick. It would be multiple picks, top four, top three rounds. But I don't necessarily think it would mean a first.
All right, on to the predictions for the 2018 NFL season. Feel free to send these into Cold Takes Exposed if you want. Let's start off with the MVP. Lebowitz, who's your MVP this year?
Who's my MVP this year? It's tough. I don't know. I think the easy pick is probably Aaron Rodgers, and I know that's what you were going to pick. But I can't really see anyone else fighting for it besides him. I don't know any other quarterback who's really good. Maybe Carson Wentz, but he's coming off of an injury, and it's also you look at the Super Bowl hangover, perhaps. If it's not Aaron Rodgers, I think Carson Wentz is going to be a guy who fights for it. Obviously, Tom Brady's always in the hunt, but with the weapons he has, I don't think it's going to happen for him this season.
Yeah, I think – I mean, the guys you mentioned, I think Drew Brees, Matt Ryan will find themselves in the conversation too. But I like Aaron Rodgers. They went out. They got him some new weapons. I think getting Jimmy Graham will be big. He's also just healthy. He knows he got that contract, and I think that contract is the window, essentially, of how many more shots he has at this. He was frustrated last year that he couldn't play. I think he's coming back. He's coming back with vengeance. I like a big year for Aaron Rodgers. Don't know if it ends in a Super Bowl, but I like a big year for Aaron Rodgers. Defensive player of the year.
I don't think this guy is going to win it. He's an interior defensive lineman, so I don't think they give out to interior defensive linemen all the time. But Aaron Donald, someone who I think is going to be unbelievable this season, probably one of the most valuable defensive players.
They're talking about playing him on the edge this year more. So if he can get the sack number up, I that's not a bad pick.
Especially the fact that got Ndamukong Suh on that team now. It's going to be an unbelievable pass rush. Just really an unbelievable defensive line for that Rams team. And with that cushion of Suh, I expect him to play even more out of his mind than he has during his career this season.
I'm going to go Khalil Mack, honestly. Another revenge tour guy. I think he's going to be playing with a vengeance. I like the system set up for him in Chicago, and there aren't great offensive lines in the NFC North. So I think Khalil Mack can do some damage. And yeah, I think he's riding on that new contract. I think he's riding on the fact that Oakland didn't want to pay him. I think he's out there to prove it to a lot of people. I see a big season for Khalil Mack. I think he's my pick for defensive player of the year. Offensive rookie of the year, Lebowitz.
I got Saquon Barkley. I think he's going to be a guy who's going to, you know, you see the quarterbacks pick. I don't think there's going to be a rookie quarterback that makes a huge impact this season. Saquon Barkley is already NFL-ready guy, NFL-ready body, and he's going to get a ton of carries in New York. So he's someone just based off of the role he's going to play on that team, he's going to have the best shot to win Rookie of the Year, Offensive Rookie of the Year.
I have Christian Kirk, the wide receiver out of Texas A&M, now in Arizona. It's kind of an off-the-radar pick. I know that. My rookie picks tend to be. But I think with Fitzgerald opposite him, and that's a great guy for him to learn from. The quarterback situation isn't great, but Bradford is more than capable. And if not Bradford, it's Rosen, who, if you've ever listened to the show, you know I'm really high on. I think he was the best quarterback in the draft. I think he went in a great situation. He's a great wide receiver for the modern day NFL because he can do so much. You can use him as a deep threat if you need. You can use him intermediately if you need. You can use him as a slot receiver if you need. So I think he just does a lot. I think he's in a position where he's going to catch a lot of passes this year. I think on the numbers, will he be the most impressive rookie? Tough to say. I think Barkley's going to put on a show at times. I think Chubb's going to put on a show at times. I think you'll get, you know, spot moments from guys like Sam Darnold, from guys like Baker Mayfield. But I think Christian Kirk puts up the numbers that get him to Offensive Rookie of the Year. Other side of the ball, Defensive Rookie of the Year.
I think I'm going to be boring. Top five pick again. Bradley Chubb, he's going to be in Denver. He's
going to pick, though. Strong pick.
I mean, it makes sense. It's logical. It's not out there. It's the fact that he has Von Miller opposite him, and I think he'll have a lot of opportunity to disrupt whatever offense he's going up against. And I just think that's the most sensible pick. I think it comes down to the role he's going to play for that team and really just the cushion of having an already decent pass rush in Denver.
I think Minkah Fitzpatrick, safety from Alabama, now in Miami, he's going to have a lot of chances because Miami's going to be behind in a lot of games. He's going to have a lot of chances to make plays in the run, against the run, which is really where he was at his best against Alabama. Don't get me wrong. The guy's outstanding at covering the pass, but he's going to get a chance to move around, play in the box a little bit, play deep safety, maybe play a little bit of corner. I was torn between him and Derwin James. I thought they were the two best defensive players in this draft. I know people like Chubb. I thought, Fitzpatrick and James were the two best defensive players. I think they both went into outstanding situations. Fitzpatrick in Miami and James in LA with the Chargers. But I went with Fitzpatrick because I think the other players around him will help him out in that situation. Alex Lovitz, Coach of the Year.
I'm going to go Bill O'Brien. I think this is a season he's going to have a completely healthy Deshaun Watson. He's already got a great defense behind him. A lot of it comes down to J.J. Watt. Can he stay healthy? That's going to be a tough one. But overall, I think Bill O'Brien, this is the one year where he actually has a really well-rounded roster. Not that he didn't last year, but I'm assuming that Deshaun Watson is going to stay healthy. He's a guy who I think's always been, you know, probably top 10, top 15 coach in the NFL, which isn't saying much these days. So I think he's due for this kind of outbreak season in regard to how the public perceives him.
I'm going to go with Bill Belichick. He won't win it, but again, with the team they have, and Brady will be part of it, but with the team they have, if he gets this team to the AFC Championship game, it has to be him. And the way he rebounded from the way last season ended, Bill, this has the potential to be one of Bill Belichick's most difficult seasons of his career. And it's like LeBron James with MVPs in the NBA. Bill Belichick doesn't win Coach of the Year because he was the best coach. He's not compared to the other 31 coaches for this award. For Bill Belichick to win Coach of the Year, it has to be an all-time Belichick season. And this season, with the schedule they have, with the players they have, I think it has a chance to be a Bill Belichick, all-time great Bill Belichick season. Two more, Lebowitz, your surprise team, your surprise impressive team. Which team is going to impress people that maybe they're not looking at right now?
I'm staying in the same lane. I think the Houston Texans are going to be a team that's going to have a really good year. I don't think that's much of a surprise. I think we all expect the Texans to probably come out on top in that division. Another team to look out for is obviously the Colts. If Andrew Luck can stay healthy, what's going to happen with them? Are they going to be a legitimate playoff team? That's yet to be determined. I think the safe pick here, though, is the Texans.
I don't know about the Colts even with Luck. I just don't think they have that many weapons around him. I'm going to go with the Browns. By surprisingly good, I don't think the Browns are making the playoffs by any means, but anytime you improve 6 wins over the previous season, that's a huge jump. I like the Browns for between 6 and 8 wins this year. They still don't have a coach, but they're doing the right thing, letting Baker Mayfield sit first and kind of learn the game from the sideline. The defense is very young, but there is some talent there. I think they are going to fall into a couple of wins. I think some people looking at the Browns after Hard Knocks and expecting another 2-3 win season, I have them at double that. Again, not a playoff team, maybe not a 500 team, but I think they're going to be better people than people think. I don't think they'll be the worst team in their division. They may not even be the second worst team in that. They may finish second in that division. I really do not have any expectations for the Bengals this year. And the Ravens, if a couple things go the wrong way, could be looking at a very poor season too. So I think the Browns are going to still a year or two off from the playoffs, but I think they are going to surprise some people this year. Who's your team that's going to take a big step back? It's going to disappoint people.
I don't think it's going to be a massive step back. I have two in mind. I think the Eagles might be one of them.
Yep.
It's a year after the Super Bowl. I just feel like there's a chance that there's complacency. Obviously, Lane Johnson.
Oh, yeah. No, that team screams Super Bowl hangover.
Like the way just he carries himself, Lane Johnson in general, just makes me think that they're going to have a massive step back given his attitude. The other team I'm looking out for, and I'm kind of skeptical about to an extent, the Vikings. I want to see how that adjustment with Kirk Cousins works out, and if they're the same team that they were last season, or if there are any hiccups. I wouldn't be surprised if they take a step back as well.
That's an interesting, and then the Patriots will play them, and that's supposed to be one of the marquee games of the year. It's a little later in the season, so if the Vikings fall apart, that would be a disappointment. I like that pick. That's a good X's and O's pick, Lebowitz. Way to stick to the motto of the show. I'll give two as well, since you did. One of them is Buffalo, just because they made the playoffs last year and then obliterated their quarterback situation. I still don't know why they traded Tyrod Taylor. And it goes back to my Browns pick, too. I think Tyrod Taylor can win the Browns a couple of games that they otherwise wouldn't win. The Bills would win a couple. There might be games this year they would have won if they had Taylor. They won't win with Peterman or Allen, so I don't know what the hell the Bills did. It's a known disappointment, but if I'm a Bills fan, I'm watching those games. I just think, how did we let Tyrod Taylor get away? My other one is the Jacksonville Jaguars. They still have a very impressive defense, maybe the best defense in football. Jalen Ramsey, say what you will about his talk. For the most part, his play backs it up. At least it did last year. But I think offensively, they played above what they can do consistently. I'm looking at a step backwards for them this year offensively. They'll still be a good team. They still should win that division, but Houston's going to be better. Like you said, Indy may be better this year. Tennessee's definitely going to be better with the additions of guys like Deion Lewis and Malcolm Butler, former Patriots. So I think Jacksonville still wins the division, but they're not going to be in the hunt for that first round bye in December, I think, like they were this past season.
Did you end up watching Hard Knocks, by the way?
So I watched it in parts. I wasn't able to sit down and watch the whole thing all the way through.
Okay.
Just but Bob Wiley is my favorite human being.
He is great. Rhode Island guy. You can tell from the he's got a little bit of that New England accent. That's a funny – it's kind of funny, though, because whenever there's a Hard Knocks team, you always kind of hype them because you're overexposed to them and you fall in love with the characters. But they do seem like a different team. They do seem like they're a little bit more they have more weapons.
The coach is still a major – look, if they actually had a capable coach, I'd probably have them at 8 wins this year.
And I like Hugh Jackson. You know, I hated Todd Haley. I did not mind Hugh Jackson during the
– he's a terrible coach. From what I saw, he seems like a nice guy. Wouldn't pick him as a football coach.
I think his players like him. I don't think he's a great coach. I agree with that. But I think Tyrod Taylor is a legitimate, really good NFL quarterback.
Yes,
and I think even Baker Mayfield, he's got an attitude of a winner. And I know that's cliche to say, but
– no, but he does. And I talked about on the show, I wanted Baker on the Patriots. I think that he can do what it takes to win games at this level. Give me one more just random prediction for the year. One more prediction.
A random prediction for the year. That's really tough. You go first.
Marvin Lewis will not lose his job. It's going to be frustrating. I don't know if it's random at this point or if it's expected. Marvin Lewis is going to make it through the season with the Bengals, and we'll be back at this point next year wondering why Marvin Lewis is still the head coach of the Bengals. It's beyond frustrating. The dude is now with Mike Scioscia retiring, the third longest tenured coach in professional sports after Bill Belichick and Greg Popovich. And he can't control his locker room. He can't control his players. His game plans have been questionable for years, but I think he survives another year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, if he hasn't been fired yet, then when is he going to be fired? That's how I see it. I don't know if I have a really strong prediction for this season. This is one. I think this could be when you say Marvin Lewis is not going to be fired. I think Pete Carroll will be fired at the end of the season.
At the end of the season or during the season?
It could be during the season, but this is the last year that Pete Carroll will be the coach.
This
of the
is
Seahawks.
It for Pete. I love that. I love that prediction. That's a very good one too, because that team, talk about teams are going to take a step back this year. We could go through all 32 NFL teams, but we don't have time for that. We will have our NFL recap shows again on Sundays. Follow us on Twitter at Call It Podcast for more on those. We'll get into it more on Sunday. But on the other side, one of the great television shows of its era makes its return this week after a long break. What to expect, what we're hoping for, coming up on the other side.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Calling It with Alex Barth and Alex Lebowitz. Before we get into our Outside the World of Sports segment, one more sports thing to mention from Wednesday. How about that Brandon Phillips home run to beat the Atlanta Braves? Phillips was signed a couple months ago. They were trying to fast track him. He broke his wrist, hit 300 in the minors. Now he's back. And not just that he hit it, but the absolute swagger with which he hit it. That was just a fun. I was watching the game at Gillette with all the Patriots writers. I had a lot of fun watching that game, Lovewoods.
It kind of reminded me of an Adrian Beltre type of home run. It wasn't off the knee, but it was kind of flashy.
Yeah,
he was swinging out of his shoes, but if you can swing out of your shoes while hitting a home run, usually that's something that's used for like striking out, I feel like. It was a nice shot, and it was that was just a fun game in general.
And so somebody put this up on Twitter. This is a WEEI because it's Boston and Atlanta. They compared the Patriots' chances of winning the Super Bowl down 28-3 with the Red Sox chances of winning down 7-1 in the eighth. The Falcons' chance of winning was 99.7. The Braves' chance of winning today was 99.4. And they go on to lose 9-8. So, and Phillips is eligible for the postseason roster. Rob Bradford confirmed that. It was kind of tough to figure out today, but yeah. That looks like it'll be a fun signing. And I got to meet him when he was in Lowell too, and could not have been a nicer guy. Clearly loves the game. He's not doing this for the money. He's doing this because he wants a chance to win a ring. And I really hope that he's on the postseason roster. And if not, he gets a ring if the Red Sox do that. Cause that moment alone today was worth the ring.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think Brandon Phillips, he's not a future Hall of Famer, but he's someone who was a really good player during his time and relatively one of the best at his positions. What is he? Four-time All-Star.
So three-time All-Star, four-time Gold Glove, two-time Silver Slugger, I believe.
So he has a really, really great career and a heck of a player, good clubhouse guy. So I wouldn't mind to see him on that clubhouse on that playoff roster. We'll talk about that in the coming weeks, but I don't know if they'll need him. But again, we'll talk about that in the coming weeks.
Yeah. More importantly today, the other return on top of the only return more interesting than the return of Brandon Phillips is the return of Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It comes back tonight. Has always been one of my favorite shows. I think just the way they go about it differently than any other show on television. There are other very funny shows on television, but I just think they have a style that nobody once a show comes out, and there's so much crap on TV now that once a show comes out and it's good, everybody just kind of copies the format. And you end up with like 100 of the same show. I feel like nobody's done that to Always Sunny yet. And that's part of what keeps it so good. If that makes sense.
I feel like they've attempted it. It just, it hasn't been, you could argue that like Workaholics is kind of like It's Always Sunny type of show.
It was a little different. I would compare Workaholics more. I always thought of that. Not that I've ever watched Girls, but from what I've heard about Girls,
okay,
that was just the male version of Girls.
I can see that.
I assume you're a huge Lena Dunham fan, knowing that was. But the interesting thing is at the end of last season, if you've never watched Always Sunny, I guess thanks for listening to the episode at this point. But yeah. For those of you who watch and most people are probably listening to this after they watched it, so they kind of know what happened. But Dennis, one of the main characters, left the bar. He had a kid with a woman in North Dakota. He met during a layover on a flight, and he's gone. So Dennis had become maybe the strongest character in the last couple of seasons. And then in the trailer, you see they have a doll that looks like Dennis. And he's the actor whose name is escaping me right now.
Rob McElhenney?
No, Rob McElhenney is Mac.
Charlie Day?
No, the other one. The Golden God. Hang on. I got it.
The Golden God.
The Golden God. Glenn Howerton. Thank you.
Oh, Glenn Howerton. Oh, Dennis. Yeah.
Will not be in every episode. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do it without him. And it looks like Mindy Kaling's going to be on the show. It looks like they have some new characters in the trailer. So it's one of the few shows that even in, what are they now, season 13, there hasn't been a huge drop. So, my expectations are high. Normally, a show going into season 13, your expectations are basement level low. My expectations are pretty high for this.
I think this is the type of show that kind of would excel no matter, when they record it. I think there is, it's not really serialized. It's different every episode. And they're funny guys. They're funny people. And they got a whole team that I figure it's the type of format that's set up to succeed. So I wouldn't say it's going to be like the peak seasons, but I'll watch it. I'll give it a tune. And the same characters are there. It's one thing when you have a series that has really good writing. And that's kind of what keeps it going, like a Friends. It's another thing when you have a show that has one really good writing and really funny improvisation, but also an incredible cast. And that's what It's Always Sunny is. It's a show with an incredible cast that can carry a show, even if the dialogue isn't as strong as it once was. So I'm excited for it. I think it'll be a success. And it's something that usually when shows return for another season, you're like, ugh. But that's not the reaction I have with these guys.
What other shows are you looking for now that we're getting into the
South Park
television?
South Park.
And they're not doing this. We may have to make it like a weekly thing to review the week before South Park episode of the show. They're not doing the serial episodes anymore. They're going back to just individual episodes.
Are they?
Supposedly, they said, I read the thing. One of the writers did a Q&A with the magazine a couple months ago. But he said something like, it's not going to be central to the plot. There may be small things that carry over from episode to episode, maybe small like inside jokes or whatever. But they're not going to do that running central plot. And they're not going to talk. I don't know if they're not going to talk politics, but they said they're not going to do much with Trump because, and this was the actual quote, they can't come up with anything better than what's actually happening.
Well, that was last season too. And what they
were pretty heavy with Trump. They were very heavy with Trump.
Well, but they did in a creative way. So Mr. Garrison played Trump. So it wasn't Donald Trump. It was Mr. Garrison playing a Donald Trump like figure, which kind of made it is veiled a little bit. It's true. Like, I don't want them to really touch it because I don't know. I've been in a mood where I just can't even – I'm thinking about deleting Twitter for a month and just staying away from it because of all just the horrible news. Every day is just horrible news. It's just one bad thing after another. I just can't deal with it. And everyone always sees the worst in people instead of just being like, oh, that's a person who might have different political views. But so like, no, they should die. So I'm hoping – long story short, I'm hoping they kind of stay away from politics to an extent. Obviously, you got to touch on what's happening, socially.
Right, it's become a current event show.
Well, it's a commentary. I think, and that's the truth. Like, the reality is, it's probably the best political commentary on television, in my opinion, because it's funny, it's honest, and they do not hold back. So, I am looking forward to them, doing their political commentary because. Maybe it's needed. It's needed for them to kind of try to unravel what's going on nowadays. It's funny because for 980 WCAP, my co-host left for a week and I was hosting in his place. And it's like so much stuff happened when he was gone. It's like 10 different massive stories just all piled on each other. And this is in the end of August. That's when it happens. Usually it's a dead season. So yeah, I'm just sick of that. I'm very happy that South Park's can come back and, one, distract me from that, and two, shine a light on what's the problem with what is the problem with it in the first place.
If they can capture the mood they did in the last 2 minutes of the season finale last year, And I want to get you going because you'll talk about that scene for 10 minutes. You know which one I'm talking about.
Remind me, because it all
one about victimhood.
Oh, yes, yes,
the
yes.
The last 2 minutes, if they can capture that movie, I thought that was the best part. That was one of the best things they've done in a while. One other show, and I know you watched the show too, and the trailer just dropped, I think, Monday. Big Mouth.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Season two. I'm impressed. I wasn't sure they were going to get a season two just because a lot of those people are big names, and I thought it would be tough for them to put it together as quickly as they did. But that's not till, I want to say, October 5th.
October 5th or 26th or something. Yeah.
But all my favorite Netflix shows, Bojack's got a season coming out the 15th.
And F is for Family is coming back, I believe.
I didn't see that. Is there going to be a third F is for Family?
I don't know if they've announced it what date it is, but I believe it's coming back for another season.
Oh, yes. All right. A lot of good TV this fall. And, of course, because now we have this third non-sports segment, and I think when we're not watching sports, we're watching TV. So
yeah.
There you go. That's going to do it, though, for this week's show. We will be back at some point next week. Again, we don't know the day, so follow us on Twitter at Callin' It Podcast to recap the Patriots' first game, look at what's ahead. And we'll obviously kind of go Red Sox heavy next week since we didn't get a chance to talk about them much this week. But until then, again, follow the show at Callin' It Podcast, and you can check us out online at clnsmedia.com. Until then, he's Alex Lebowitz. I'm Alex Barth. This has been Callin' It, powered by CLNS. Thanks for listening, and enjoy football season.